Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 255. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, are you going to be deferring $68 million of your salary every year to the future?
Maybe $68, but I'll take a small portion off Otani's hands if he so gladly wishes to donate to the podcast, to either one of our websites. That would be incredible. But otherwise, like I said, start up a lot of controversy of why should the Dodgers be allowed to do this, blah, blah, blah. Why did Otani do this? We can get into that, but we don't need to. We're here to talk first base, but I'm doing good. Hope you are as well.
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's funny though; like people are already mad about it because he didn't sign with their team. Like, yep. if this was, I'm going to use Blue Jays fans just for example. If he did this with the Blue Jays, he would be absolutely fine with it. It's just because he went with the Dodgers. Obviously, Dodgers are one of the powerhouses. Always are. So people are mad about it. Oh, they've been clearing money for a while now, so I'm not always surprised. And then Otani, just a good dude. Don't be mad at Otani. But yes, we are here to talk first base. This is first base week here at the Tool Shed. We got first base prospect ranking talk today and first base dynasty talk later this week on the Friday episode. Before we get into the rankings and player discussions and all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Shows at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for all of our work, rankings, write-ups, a lot of good stuff there. Chris just started his Dynasty ADPs or Dynasty mock drafts for his ADP. So those are going on right now. Already in the third round of mines. That'll be coming out, obviously, right after those get done. So check out his site for that. A lot of fun stuff on both platforms. All right, first base prospects, Chris. We've talked about this before we started recording. It's a little weird to do first base prospect rankings because a lot of big first basemen don't always start out at first base. They start out as third basemen that come over for the first because they outgrow the position. Quarter enough of guys come into first base. Catchers move off and go to first base. We see a few of those names on here in our rankings here. So it's a really weird position, but there are some good first base only prospects here as well. So I'm not saying this is a position devoid of talent and value because it definitely is some. But let's start out with our personal top 10 first base prospect rankings. Chris, why don't you go first?
So we talked about this guy last week, but he's catcher and first base, and that's Samuel Basalo at number one, followed by Kyle Manzardo, Xavier Isaac, Joey Loperfido, Ryan Clifford at five, and then six through 10, Bryce Eldridge, Tyler Soderstrom, Tyler Locklear, Abimelech Ortiz, and Nathan Martorella round out that top 10 for me.
All right, so I have the exact same one and two with Sammy Basalo and Kyle Manzardo. We're very close in my overall rankings, I think about three spots apart. Then a little bit of a drop, about 15 spots or so, down to I have Tyler Locklear at three, Abimelech Ortiz, four, Joey Loperfido, five, Xavier Isaac, six, Ben Rice, who we talked about last week, at seven, Ryan Clifford at eight, Tyler Soderstrom at nine, and last year's first base crush of everybody, or most people, Matty Mervis at 10. So let's start, obviously, we talked Basalo last week, so we don't need to talk about him again here. Obviously, he's really freaking good, and why he's been first overall at both these positions so far. Let's start with Kyle Manzardo here at number two, guy that we're probably going to see very early in 2024, possibly even on opening day, definitely in the cards, especially if he has a good spring training. Obviously, he had a very productive Arizona Fall League showing after a bit of a down minor league season. Obviously, had a lot of the stuff off the field going on that kind of hindered his performance. But, Chris, what are both your short-term and long-term expectations for a guy like Manzardo? Like, is he a guy you'd be looking maybe draft next year? Like the price was around pick 300 last time I looked. It's probably changed since then. But and then long term, what do you expect from him? Like, how high, when he settles in, kind of established, like, where do you think he falls within the ranks of first base?
He's an interesting profile, and we saw some shifts this year, and I do think a lot of it goes beyond the on the field stuff. But ultimately, we are looking at a strong hit profile. I think it's easily plus hit. The contact rates weren't as high as they were in 2022, but still solid. But we did see the power growth this year. We saw the power tick up by nearly 3 miles an hour on the ninth percentile, which is the high-end EVs, which is very encouraging to see because I think people really questioned the power and what kind of power would he get to. And the EVs in 2022 were below average to average at best. This year we saw it tick up a bit, where I think that we will see him settle in around a 20-25 home run bat. He hit some majestic looking home runs in the home run derby in the fall league, doing some awesome things there, had a great fall league, and hit for average as well. So if you get the best of both worlds with Manzardo, I think you're looking at a top 10 first baseman long term, not only not prospect-wise, but dynasty-wise, because really, outside the top five, like, and we'll get to dynasty first baseman later in the week, but kind of a shallow position. I don't think there's a lot of depth there, and Manzardo could easily slide in and be highly effective right off the bat, and I think that happens pretty soon. I know everybody's freaking out because Cleveland drafted Davison De Los Santos in the Rule 5. Let's be honest. I don't think De Los Santos is going to be on the roster. I think he'll be returned to Arizona after spring training. Just my personal opinion. I don't think that affects Manzardo one bit. I still think he's the guy at first base this year for them and hit the ground running.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think De Los Santos is the long-term picture there. But you're looking at first base rankings for Dynasty, like my number 10, that puts him in the range of Spencer Steer, Josh Naylor, Nathaniel Lowe territory. So do I think he can get up into there? Absolutely. And do I think he can get up into Tristan Cassis territory, Cody Bellinger territory? Probably not, but I wouldn't completely rule that out. So I think settling in like that 7-10 range is definitely possible. I think this could be a range where we have Torque, where we have maybe some Encarnacion Strand, maybe some Vinny P, plus the guys I already mentioned. They'll be maybe get up a few more spots as well. So I definitely see him getting up there. Like, I already have him top about 175 overall as my first base 19 for Dynasty. And he might even move up a couple spots before I actually finish those rankings. But pretty solid range there. Eric Alkbohm, Yandy Diaz, guys like that right now, Ryan Mountcastle, those types. But yeah, very safe profile. Obviously, the approach is very good. Always has been. Always will be. Walks a ton. Doesn't strike out too much. And hits, like you mentioned, great contact skills and the improved power. So maybe you're looking at a guy, 275, 280 type of hitter, 25 plus home runs, solid counting stats, just like a really good, probably never got that stands out, but a really good kind of four category guy. And I think that Cleveland lineup could be sneaky good. We'll see if they add to it. They'll have Benzardo up soon, DeLauder up soon. So I think that could be a sneaky good lineup, at least in the with the guys around Manzardo. So yeah, I definitely think top 10 first base is definitely possible for him. So after two, obviously, again, we had the same 1-2 of Bassalo and Manzardo. We have similar players, but in a different order here. But we'll go to you here, Chris, with Xavier Isaac. You have him 3, I have him 6. And I'm very high on him as well. I think I have him like 55th or something like that overall, top 60. But you have him 3 overall. So where do you have him in your overall rankings, not just at this position?
Let me tell you. Let me look.
I'm going to guess probably what, low 30s?
No, I'm not that high on him at all, actually. I've got him at 58. I'm just generally lower on most of these first base prospects outside of Bassalo and Manzardo.
Yeah, so you get a big jump there.
Yeah, so it jumps. Manzardo's top 25, Basalo's top 20, and then it falls pretty significantly. There's so many risks with a lot of these guys, and we can talk about that, but yep. I do think there's major risk in Xavier Isaac's profile, despite having him number 3, because there's some major contact flaws here that we're looking at, where as the season went on, the contact rates actually got worse for Isaac. And if I'm not mistaken, in the second half, he's around 65% contact. And that's scary numbers. But with all that being said, the rest of these guys, too, also have their concerns. And there's reasons for all these guys to, they're interchangeable in a sense of Isaac down to even Abimelech Ortiz, for that matter, for me. So it's a pretty big tier just because of the concerns that all of them have in some sense. And that's why Zardo is so safe. He's so trustworthy because of the contact skills. Isaac ran a 69% contact rate for the year, but in the second half, that did dip to 65%. And those are just not passable. The thing is, you can look and say, oh man, the second half, he slashed 308, 409, 599. That's over 1,000 OPS. But you're not going to get away with those kind of contact rates at the higher levels of the minors. Right. So he's going to have to make some adjustments to improve. Isaac's actually a pretty decent athlete. He moves well for his size. Caught me off guard when I saw him this year. So, dang, this guy actually moves pretty well for his body. The power's massive. There's no denying that. But ultimately, just landed on Isaac at 3. From the standpoint of just looking at the fact that he does already have the power. We're already seeing some massive EVs. And while there are contact concerns, there's concerns for everybody else down the board, as I mentioned. Isaac's the best of this concerning bunch.
Yeah, none of these guys are perfect. There's flaws in everyone, but there's also some exciting elements of the profile for everyone. And the one I wanted to highlight, you know, in this range, who I have as my number 4, it might even move up to number 3. I was very up on the fence with these two. Probably am going to move them ahead once I look into this more. But Abimelech Ortiz is someone that, and then you were one of the earlier guys in on him. I remember seeing you tweet about him. I don't remember when it was at this point, but earlier on than most people. So credit where credit is due there. But every time I just watch video of him, look into the profile, I keep moving him up and up. And right now he's right around 40 overall. For me, as my number 4 guy, again, I might move him ahead of Locklear here pretty soon. Like, I've been tweeting about him a lot, looking at he hit over 280 with a 300 plus ISO. Only 2 other guys did that in the minor leagues this year that were under the age of 23. Oddly enough, all 3 of them were in the Texas Rangers org, the other 2 being Wyatt Langford and Brittany Morel. You know, guy that had a 10.5% walk rate, almost 11% walk rate, did check out a little bit too much, 27.8% K rates. He's a guy that also has a little bit better contact rates than Isaac, around that 70% mark. Not terrible. I want to see that rise up a bit there, but the power is just so good here with Ortiz. And even Jeff Ponce tweeted about him about a month and a half ago as well, that he said underneath the hood, Ortiz added 5 miles an hour to his average EV and 3.5 miles an hour onto his 90th percentile. He wrote an article about that about a month and a half ago in Baseball America that I highly recommend. But like, this guy could be like a 30-plus homer bat. I think there's enough contact there to, you know, given the quality of contact as well, to at least hit 250, 260 or so. Maybe we can see that tick higher if he can improve the contact rates. Good OBP guy as well. Not going to be a guy that gives you much speed at all, but the bat is just so good there, at least the power part of the bat. So, again, like we got to nitpick these profiles. Again, like you mentioned, there's a lot of good stuff about these profiles, but there's some weaknesses within all of them. So which one do you – which profile do you value more? Which one do you feel safer by? So that's why I have him at 4, probably push him up to 3 here pretty soon, because I just love the power so much. And I think the contact skills are not – like really worrisome. Again, I'd like to see them tick up. But what are your thoughts on Ortiz here, Chris? You have him at number 9 overall, but I'm assuming all of these guys are a pretty big cluster for you.
Yeah, he's still top 100 overall. And you look, and the only thing that concerns me a lot about Ortiz's body, how that ages. But as you mentioned, the power's not far off from Isaac. Actually, the average EV was higher than Isaac's this year. But Isaac's 9th percentile is about 2 miles an hour higher. We're looking at 108 versus 106.5. So I guess a mile and a half difference. But those are still firmly plus numbers, which are huge. Ortiz, he topped out at 115, which is, you know, pretty big power for his age, obviously. He hits the ball in the sweet spot very often. Ideal launch angles, which really allows him to get in that home run power. The hard hit launch angle is really good. And you mentioned the contact rates are better than Isaac, which is, I think, notable, where he's 79% in the zone, which is still slightly below average, but not bad. And then right at 70% overall, which is better than Isaac. And so it depends on what you're looking at there and what you want to see. But when I look at this profile, it is interesting to look and see the difference. Isaac's just a more patient hitter, a lot lower chase versus Ortiz, but Ortiz still running chase rates slightly better than league average. So yeah, I saw him quite a bit this year. He's with Hickory, so they came down to Greenville quite often. And it's big body, big bat, easy power, get eaten up with some breaking balls. But you know, like I said, big cluster, big tier. I can argue for any of these guys 3 through 9 that I have, honestly. And yep, I wouldn't be upset with any of them being 3 or any of them being 9 when it comes down to it. But the biggest thing for me right now with Ortiz is just, it's a smaller track record and in the body as well, which is why he's at the bottom of this tier. But I do think it's possible that he moves up this tier pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that are pretty close in my rankings as well here. But let's talk about the other guy that is the only guy that we both have top 5 outside of Basalo and Manzardo. And that's Joey Loprofito from the Houston Astros. You know, just a really fun profile. You know, you look at where he played, you know, he played multiple spots this past year. I'd say it was like 2/3 of that was in the outfield, but also played around 20 games at both first base and second base. Good athlete, obviously, plus runner. Yeah, he stole 27 bags this past year. Really had like a really fantasy-friendly season in the minor leagues between 3 levels, majority of which was at AA. Overall, in 540 plate appearances, .278, .370, .510. 27 doubles, 25 home runs, 27 steals. He's only caught 4 times as well. Guy that has a walk rate over 10%. I did that last year as well. Last year, he went 12-32 in 108 games while hitting .316 with a .408 OBP. It was a little old for the levels. That's, I think, at least for me, I saw that. He was on my radar, and I had him in my rankings, but I'm like, all right, let's see him do it. He was 23 years old, and most of his season was at low A. Okay, let's see him do it again at high A, double A, etc. And he did that. Yeah, the average dipped a little bit, but contact skills are okay. I think 75% range. Power, you could probably say fringe average at Houston, could be like a 15 to 20 homer guy with 20 plus steals. If he gets a chance to play full time, I know that's going to be hard in Houston, but they do have some injury risk guys, Altuve, so he could play some second. Yordan, obviously, unfortunately. So we could see him play multiple spots here, but Yeah, I like the profile a lot. That's why we both have him top five in our rankings here. And I know you said you have him around 60 overall. I have him around 40. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Joey Loprofito?
Yeah, I think that it's more of a fantasy friendly skill set, as you mentioned, where he may contribute more in that sense than in real life. He played like all over the board. He's bounced around. There's really solid just numbers across the board. And I will say it's worth noting that the contact skills trend in the wrong direction all year. As the season went on, the number dropped, like I said, still landed at 75%, which is really good. And that was with a 66% over like his final 200 plate appearances. So that's a little bit concerning, but there is power. He's got low chase rates, like the power already, like EV's like MLB average already. And there's probably room for more too, where he's a pretty interesting player. He's got most of his power coming to the pool side. So if he continues to just hit the ball to all fields, I think the profile is really going to play. And he has ideal launch angles. So yeah, he really does a lot of things. He's not going to be like a superstar in any one area, but I think he just crossed the board like a really good asset.
Do you see him ever being a starter with Houston? It's hard to say, but obviously they have a lot of guys on that team, and it takes a long time for certain guys to even break into that lineup. We saw Chaz McCormick break in, though he wasn't like a huge prospect or anything like that. But do you see him even this year? Obviously, he's pretty close to being ready. He got up to AAA for about a month and a half end of the season. Obviously, like you, as you mentioned, the production went down a bit, especially with the contact rates. But do you see him making an impact this year?
Maybe not as much this year, but I do think that everything kind of lines up well for him. Altuve's a free agent after 2024, assuming that they re-sign him, but there's been talks of Bregman being traded. Like, I'm curious as what direction the Astros are ultimately going, and it's hard to say. Bregman does expire after this year as well. So those guys, it's hard to see them anywhere else, but that is notable that they do have some potential openings. Obviously, you've got like Jordan and Tucker that are going to be around for a while, but didn't really affect him at all. You've got Jose Abreu he's around through 2025. So there are potential openings, I think. Maybe not so much this year. If there's an injury, yeah, I think he gets a shot. But for right now, I would say he probably spends the majority of the year in AAA, but I would say come 2025, he does have a chance to be an everyday player, depending on how that bat develops. Houston's a tough place to crack in. You have to be an above average regular to be an everyday guy there. And that puts pressure, but I believe that he's more than capable of doing that. So we'll see what the Astros decide to do. You'll have a 34, nearly 35 year old Altuve entering free agency, 30 year old Bregman entering free agency. Could create some interesting opportunities. We'll see what they do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he does play some this year, just strictly due to, like I mentioned earlier, the just injury risk. Like, can we bank on Altuve playing, 150 plus games, or even Jordan, which I hate to say, because I have so many Jordan shares. I wish he would. But yeah, I think you'll see some time. Maybe he gets 200, 250 play appearances this year. But maybe you mentioned some guys maybe leave free agency. We'll see. But maybe 2025 is the year that the first real big impact year for Loprofito. But I think we look at just these guys at this position for prospects. I could argue that like his fantasy ceiling is right up there, close to Manzardo's, like maybe even higher, because given the speed that he brings to the table as well, more well-rounded profile. I think you could say he's easily like the third highest ceiling. I think, at least for me, a lot of fun profiles here, a lot of different profiles. So it's really fun to debate a lot of these guys. Now, one other one that we both have here inside our top 10 who didn't have the greatest year last year, and that's Tyler Soderstrom, who's another one of those guys that catcher, first base. But I think we're both always, I'm leaning first base for him long term, just because due to the presence of Shea Langeliers there. And last year he did play 13 starts at DH for Oakland, 15 at catcher, 8 at first. Still about two-thirds of his place in the field were at the catcher spot, but I wonder if he does shift more over to first base moving forward. But in his time with the Oakland Athletics, just 138 plate appearances, so still a small sample size, but did not look good at all. 160, 232, 240 slash line, three home runs, one double. And again, those 138 plate appearances, walked 11 times, struck out 43 times. Are you concerned? Has your, obviously, again, small sample size, but has your like long-term kind of opinion on him or your long-term outlook on a guy like Soderstrom changed after the struggles you saw from him in his debut with Oakland?
I don't want to. I think he got thrown into a pretty crappy situation because for the last 2 years, everything's been really good under the hood for Soderstrom. The one flaw being the chase rate, highly aggressive swinger. So he's going to chase pitches out of the zone. So that's left the question marks. This year, you saw him chase at a 35% clip. That's a pretty high mark. Hitters have got away with it. He negates it by making contact in the zone 85% of the time, which is very helpful. Ran a 76% overall contact rate. Very high barrel rate at 13%. The exit velocity is really good. He was at a 108 90th and a 92 average in AAA. And I know he was in a park where the ball traveled, but it doesn't matter. It's not going to change those EVs being
right.
Super high ends. You can't label him a quad A player. People are going to do that already and say, oh, I can't handle big league pitching, blah, 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 blah. For whatever reason, like the same reason that Joe Adell does, but Adell can't make contact in AAA. So it's a completely different situation when we're looking at a Joe Adell making minimal contact and you have Soderstrom still young, just got a small taste of the big leagues and still putting up good AAA numbers. So yeah, I'm not as in on him as I was, but I'm still in on Tyler Soderstrom. But I think knowing the team context is important and knowing the development there hasn't been all that great, it certainly brings some pause.
And that's putting it nicely too. That was like the nicest thing you could ever say about Oakland right now. And you know, obviously people that have read my work and listened to this podcast know that I've been a guy that's been usually a bit lower on Soderstrom than most, at least over the last couple of years. But at the same time, I think he might be a solid buy because I think you hit it spot on, Chris, that people are quick these days to put that quad A label. Like people love that quad A for whatever reason. People love that label. And it's way too early. Like Joe Adell, sure. Like he's been in the league long enough where that label is absolutely fitting. But a guy like Soderstrom that only has 138 plate appearances, it's way too early for that. Absolutely way too early. And it's weird too. Like, you know, he didn't actually chase too much in the majors, at least. Like chase rate was 29.5% in the major leagues. And whiff rate was a bit high. He was just absolutely lost against anything that was in the fastball. Oh, with 0.37 against off speed. Again, only 29 plate appearances, 158 against breaking balls, both whiff rates in the 40% range, give or take a couple percentage points either way. Hit 54% ground ball rate, excuse me. So there are some things to work on here. The power is solid. You mentioned the AAA metrics there. And yeah, it doesn't matter where you are. The ballpark, the environment doesn't change. Contact rate doesn't change. EVs, barrel rates, stuff like that. So still, I'm still concerned. Obviously, too many strikeouts, 31.2%. But I still think he can be like a decent, maybe a corner infield option. Maybe a guy that's hitting 250, 25 home runs, something like that. Again, not a standout, and I've been lower than most, but I think actually this might be a good buying opportunity, especially if in your league, if people are throwing on that quad A label, maybe try to swoop in and get him for pretty dirt cheap right now. I think this might be the lowest his perceived value is for a good amount of time. But all right, let's move on to the next set of guys here in our rankings. But to recap, top 10 real quick for Chris: Pasalo, Manzardo, Isaac, Liberfito, Clifford, Eldridge, Soderstrom, Locklear, Ortiz, and Martorella. And for me, Pasalo, Manzardo, Locklear, Ortiz, Liberfito, Isaac, Rice, Clifford, Soderstrom, and Matt Mervis. Let's go 11 through 25 here.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For me, that is Moises Ballesteros, Nathan Martorella. Have you ever said Motorola when saying his name, Chris? First off, yeah. I just want to ask you that.
No, but it does look like it, and you want to say that. Just
you definitely want to say Motorola. It's every single time I want to say that. I want to say Motorola. But Nathan Martorella, Bryce Eldridge, Nolan Shanwell, Blaze Jordan, your friend Medina, Troy Johnston, Ivan Melendez, Spencer Horwitz, Andres Chaparro, Davison De Los Santos, Lucan Baker, Luis Suisbel, Reggie Crawford, and Samuel Munoz round out my 25. Chris, who's your 11 through 25?
So I'm starting out with Mr. Ben Rice. Ohio, we talked about him last episode. And then it's Blaze Jordan, Nolan Shanuel, Moises Ballesteros, Hayden McGeary. 16 through 20 is Matt Mervis, Spencer Horwitz, Davison De Los Santos, Ivan Melendez, and Luis Suspel. And then 21 through 25 being Reggie Crawford, Wes Clark, Kalai Rosario, Alan Roden, and Troy Johnston to round it out.
All right. What's one name I wanted to get your thoughts are just from where I saw you have him. So I have this guy 13th. That's Bryce Eldridge with the San Francisco Giants. You have him up at 6th, Chris. Obviously, very intriguing profile, obviously. But what were you seeing from him that kind of caused you to push him as highly as you did in your rankings?
The body is obviously massive. Like when you're looking at a 6'7" two-way guy, you just dream on what he could do. I really think there's potential that Eldridge could do both. Now, this is a really rare thing. We've seen so many guys be drafted two-way and not be able to. Shohei Ohtani has defied everything about what we've come to know about two-way players and has done it really well. I'm not completely confident that he ends up being a two-way guy, but on the mound, he's already 96 with a sinker, high release point, plays really well down, a lot of ground balls, big sweeping slider in the low 80s, curve and changeup. Didn't really have to use often as a prep, but he's got both those pitches in the arsenal. He's got a big strike zone, obviously, as most 6'7" guys do. You think about Spencer Jones, how he struggled with contact for a little while because of just the big strike zone coming into professional baseball. And while Eldridge only played a small amount of games, he had 31 games between the complex and single A, he made really good contact. He chased just 20% of pitches out of the zone, which is wild to think about when your zone is size it is. It's easy to expand the zone with the longer levers. And the exit velocities were superb. And so even if Eldridge doesn't end up a two-way guy, if he ends up only first base, I think you're looking at a high OBP profile that ends up with 25 to 30 home runs annually and solid contact skills as well. Like the average may end up pretty decent. Like I threw a peak projection on him of like 270 average, like a 350, 360 OBP with 25 to 30 home runs, which would be pretty stellar. So just given what we saw in his debut, like just really in on Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah, he was one of the harder ones, at least at this position, for me to rank. And part of me wanted to put him higher, and I probably will. I'm feeling too low on him right now because I echo a lot of what you said. Obviously, there's a lot of upside on both sides of the ball here. It was very impressive in the small sample size. And those 31 games between basically split between complex and low A, 294, 400, 505, 11 extra base hits, 6 home runs, 20 walks to 34 Ks, hit basically the same, had the same exact average basically at both levels, OBP right around 400 at both levels. Power did tick down, but in low A, but again, only 15 games there. Yeah, it's very exciting profile, big time power. Yeah, I think San Fran got a good one here. I drafted them 16th overall. So this is a guy tying into FYPD that maybe he's a guy that should be going top 15 or so in FYPD, or at least maybe outside the top 10 options or so. Maybe he's a guy, if you want to go with that upside pick, Eldridge is pretty damn good there. And it's not like there's a lot of guys in this way in San Francisco. They have a lot of guys that are feel like a stopgap option for the next couple of years until some of their prospects are ready. But yeah, Eldridge is definitely has the upside. He's only 19 years old, just turned 19 about a month and a half ago, or in late October. But yep, that feels weird. He was born 1 week before the Red Sox broke the curse in 04.
That's wild.
Like literally 1 week, October 20th.
That's crazy.
I don't know how I want to feel about that. That's the fact that that was 19 years ago, first off, just blows my freaking mind. But anyway, back on track here. Yeah, Eldridge, guy, I probably should move him higher. Actually, I feel like he should be like 9th or 10th, actually, in my ranking. So I'm going to make probably a little update on that after the show. Another name here kind of in this range of rankings. That's just a really interesting name right now, given the hype that he had this time last year, coming off the big minor league season. Nice showing out in the Arizona Fall League, where it pushed his ADP way up. Obviously, talking about Matt Mervis from the Chicago Cubs. Last year at this time, let's see, his minor league season, he was coming off 36 home runs in 137 games, 309, 379, 606 slash, and then gets up to the majors this year for 27 games over various stints, slash 167, 242, 289, three home runs in 99 plate appearances. You know, numbers in AAA were still pretty solid, 282, 399, 533, 22 home runs in 100 games on the dot, still walks a good amount, keeps the K rate relatively in check, though he did strike out a little over 32% of the time with the Cubs. Still has some solid power with the Cubs, but Chris, maybe it's too early to make this determination, but do you think Mervis hits enough to just really unlock the power fully and be like an everyday first baseman? That's the question I have right now. I think you give him 650 plate appearances like right now this year, I think he could push 30 home runs. I don't really have much doubt in that, but if that does happen, like, what's the average look like? Is it like 200? Can he be 240, 250, 260 in that range? Is he more of an OBP guy? You know, probably yes on that one, but do you think he hits enough? I think
there's questions.
Yeah.
You see what Mervis did, and you look at the major breakout, and you could say he was kind of nowhere, but I'm not really sure that's the case. I think Mervis is still solid. I think Mervis is faded in a lot of circles because of the fact that he didn't come up to the majors and just explode like many hoped that he would. And he had a solid showing this year, but not to the level that many would have hoped. Just 22 home runs. We saw the exit velocities actually take a step back this year. They were still solid. Like, his average EV was around league average, 89, the ninth percentile, like near 106. So it's solid, like you mentioned, but what kind of contact does he make? The contact rate was below 70% in AAA. So that's a minor red flag. You want the contact rate to be closer to or above 70%. I think like 73% is a pretty good threshold for a minor leaguer. And so that's a bit concerning there. But the zone contact was 82%. So I don't know. I think Mervis can be a 260 hitter in the majors, if all clicks right. But there is downside too. And I think we saw a little bit of that this year. We are looking at a 25-year-old that is going to be 26 a couple weeks after the season begins next year. And Mervis is a great story. I think Mervis has great power, but I think you may be looking at more of a platoon bat. That's my read on the situation, is that he just might end up being a platoon. And while he'd be on a strong side of platoon, he may end up playing a little bit better there. Pull up the splits for this year just to confirm that I was remembering that correctly. Yeah, it's not drastic, but against righties, obviously, he's a left-handed battery at 267 with a 375 OBP, 500 slug. And then against lefties, the strikeout rate is what's the key here, but he did hit 230 with a 355 OBP and a 430 slug. So the slug goes way down there, but he did strike out 43 times over 121 plate appearances. That's a 36% K rate against lefties. So
yeah,
that's obviously a little bit of concern and leave some platoon questions.
Yeah. And getting back to that power, you know, in that small sample size with the Cubs, 13.8% barrel rate, 91 mile an hour average EV, and a 50% hard hit rate. But again, did strike out over 32% of the time. So it definitely, I would still be one to buy low. I think people are in the mindset that maybe last year was or 2022 was a fluke. Maybe he's not good. Maybe obviously the value rose too high. That's easily safe to say. But I think there's still a nice little buying window here, similar with Soderstrom, where the value has sunk to the point where I think that creates that buying opportunity. So I'd be looking to buy in this low risk potential, decent reward here. I mean, not a super high reward, but definitely will look. I'm not fully out on Matt Murphy's yet, that's for sure. Another name that's interesting, let's go over to my Red Sox, obviously a team that you see a ton as well down there in Greenville. Blaze Jordan, a guy that you have 12th, I have 15th. And I don't think Blaze has been solid. He hasn't stood out. He hasn't been bad. He's been pretty decent both years, or both full years in the minor leagues here. Obviously, he had a nice little breakout in 2021 after the draft. And then 2022, 289, 363, 445. In 2023, 296, 351, 481. Although did drop off pretty substantially after his promotion from high A to double A, though the contact rates have remained pretty solid in the mid-70s. So I'm not really questioning the profile, at least not too much here, Chris, but I just don't know, where does he fit in with Boston? Obviously, Cassis is the long-term first baseman. They got Devers locked up for a long time. Do they just make him a full-time DH? You know, I don't really think outfield is in this future. Maybe, I don't know. But you don't see a lot of teams going that full-time DH route as much anymore. Maybe he's a trade chip. I don't know. What are your thoughts moving forward on Blaze Jordan?
I think that the book's kind of still to be written on him. He's dropped 25 pounds this offseason already, and the goal is to drop even more. So does he come out more athletic? That's a question that I have. Like, what does he look like? How does he move? Because if he's moving better, then maybe he can play another position. He's not a third baseman. I can tell you that. I've seen him over there enough. He's not going to play third base at all. But the other weird thing is with Jordan, like, he really traded off power this year for contact. A very bizarre profile where his average EV was horrific, 85 miles an hour. You think about a power hitter, and I will say, like, Blaze has big power. He still probably has hit the longest home run I've ever seen in person. And an 85 average EV is not good. That's among, like, the worst in the MLB. I know he's young. No, he's not in the MLB. But beside the point, that's concerning. The contact skills were rather good, actually. Like, I was a bit surprised to see that he had an 85% zone contact and 77% overall. And really just, like, slapping a lot of the balls the other way, which is weird. Doesn't barrel a lot of balls, puts a lot of balls on the ground, and he goes oppo a lot. It's a weird profile, but I do believe the power could still be there. But I think that 2024 will be very telling for us to be able to better evaluate who Blaze Jordan is and what he ultimately looks like long term, because the data this year was just bizarre when you think about who Blaze Jordan is and, like, who is he going to be now that he's slimmed down so much. I guess we'll find out soon, but I am certainly interested to see what he looks like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I'm assuming probably back to double A to start the year, at least for the first month or two. But I want to see, are they going to use him in the outfield if he's slimmed down a little bit? Obviously, he ain't moving to middle infield, so it'd be a corner outfield. Maybe that is in the cards here. He's been pretty split, almost 50-50, actually, between the two corner infield spots. And actually had, for Greenville, 35 starts at each. In Portland here, a little bit more at first base than third base. But yeah, maybe left field. It's not, left field at Fenway isn't overly hard. You master the Manny could play left field at Fenway. So yeah. I feel like Blaze Jordan, if you just master how to play caroms off the monster, pretty much you're pretty decent out there. But yeah, we'll see. I still think there's an intriguing bat here. Maybe not a super impactful one, but definitely, I think 2024 will be a pretty telling year one way or another as to what we can expect from Jordan. Can he be, you know, a viable fantasy bat? Where does he wind up in the diamond? A lot of questions to be answered there for sure. Another name that I'm sure a lot of the listeners probably curious as to why we have him so low. I have this guy 18th, you have 19th, and that's Ivan Melendez from the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the answer is pretty simple here. Obviously, the power, Chris, is massive with Melendez, and we've seen that. But at the same time, that's really the only thing that's, you know, the green flag in his profile. And the other massive thing in his profile is the strikeout rate. You look at, in 96 games, he had 58 in high A and 38 in double A. In those 96 games, 146 strikeouts in 426 plate appearances for a 34.3 7.5% K rate and only walked. It's not like he had like a high walk rate or anything. Not terrible, but 7.3% is below average. Still at 272, but contact rates are not there. I believe they were in the low 60% range. Super high K rate. I'm questioning if he's ever a full-time MLB regular, Chris. Is that kind of where you're at with him as well?
Yeah, and the Arizona Fall League looks didn't give me any more hope
nope.
that he would be. He swung at a bunch of crap, like stuff not even close to the zone. You're right, he had a 64% contact rate, and he's a hyper-aggressive swinger, too. So, like, he's swinging a lot of pitches, and he's swinging and missing. So, yeah, it's fun power to dream on. He can hit the ball hard, but it doesn't matter if you can't make enough contact. So, that's why I'm majorly concerned with Ivan Melendez and pretty out on him. He's, if you can somehow sell off of him in Dynasty, I'd do that in a heartbeat if you could. But I'm not sure at this point you actually can. But I would at least put out feelers and try. Maybe somebody's interested in the power. I'm not so much.
You know, I think you actually might be able to, man. As I think people look at this at the slash on there, oh, he still hit 272.
Yeah.
Oh, man, he had 30 home runs and just 426 plate appearances. Oh, that equates out to like 44 home runs. Like, I think people are doing that, and it's fun. I get it, but at the same time, like that 272 average is not indicative of his contact skills or the approach that he shows. Like, look at that K to walk rate, almost 5-1. Like, that's incredibly concerning right off the bat. So, I think you still can. It's like the people, you know, and they love his nickname and obviously the power. You know, what was it?
Hispanic Titanic.
Thank you. Yeah, I was completely drawing a blank there. Hispanic Titanic. People love to say that. And that's a fun nickname. It's a great nickname, actually. I think it's an 80 grade nickname. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of red flags in this profile. So I think right now, if you don't do it now, I think you're going to, that window is going to close really quick. If he's really struggling in double A this year and hitting like 210. In June or something like that, that window will be, you'll be past the window for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, let's kind of round out the show here. Let's just pick one name from outside our top 10, one name that you can see making a pretty solid jump up these rankings next year to the point where, you know, maybe they're jumping up into the top 10, maybe even top five. Is there any name for you that really sticks out outside of your top 10?
It's a pretty tough group all around. Like, you look and all of them have like pretty inherent flaws. So that's why I'm going to go with Luis Suspil, just because he's the one that has the shortest track record, I guess you could say. And he's had a good track record of success too when he's been on the field. So two stints in the DSL is normally not a good thing. He was actually pretty bad in both stints, the DSL in 2021 and 2022. But this year he spent time in the complex and with Modesto. Split pretty evenly between both, 67 total games, and he slashed 291, 423, 529, had 12 home runs over those 67 games. That's pretty solid power that we saw, 10 doubles and even four triples too, which is pretty interesting. So ultimately, like, I would just say he's one that has a chance to jump, even though there is higher K rate, there is contact concerns, but I do believe that if he can improve on those a little bit, then we're looking at a pretty interesting player. And the contact rate actually did improve throughout the year. While it was pretty low in single A, the last month of the season, while it's still not overly impressive, it jumped to 69%, which it was at 63% before. So that's a pretty substantial jump as he adjusted to a single A ball. And again, this is like a big boom or bust pick, but he's one that has upside. And of all these guys, I think that he's one that has the best chance to really jump up.
Yeah, no, that's a great pick there. I think what he was doing this year is still getting slept on a little bit, but I'm going to go with your friend Medina from the Los Angeles Dodgers organization. What a surprise. Another intriguing guy in the Dodgers org. This guy, he repeated the DSL this year. Last year was not good at all in the DSL, but this year in 32 games, 106 plate appearances, slash 270, but with a 538 OBP and a 667 slug, more walks than strikeouts, 24-22, 14 extra base hits, and 5 home runs. This is a really big human being, but in a good way. 6'4", 195, I think he's already above that, and it's hard to say, but I'd probably guess like more like 210 at this point, but it's still like a good frame, still some projection on the frame. Won't be 19 until late January on the 25th. I'm sure he'll come stateside, go to the complex level this year. Maybe you can get a taste of low A later in the year. But there's big-time power. I expect him to run that much, especially as he continues to add bulk, or at least I assume he will. But the approach is really good. There's plenty of power projection there. He's already shown that power projection. Gets on base at a high clip. Want to see what he can do, you know, outside of the DSL. Obviously, that's always a big test, coming stateside to the complex or even low A. So I think this year would be – this is a guy that could really shoot up rankings and be like a top 50 guy overall, I think, by, you know, end of the year. Or he could be another one on the DSL standouts that fizzle out that we see dozens of every single year. But very intrigued here. Love the body, love the power, love the OBP abilities that he's shown so far. And definitely one of those flyer guys that you can get for cheap or even free, depending on the depth of your league right now. And one that could pay pretty serious dividends. If he doesn't, oh, you move on to the next guy. Perfect flyer type in dynasty leagues. So your friend Medina is mine. But that's going to wrap us up for our first base prospect rankings episode here. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this. We'll be back again on Friday with our dynasty first base rankings. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.